Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from The Voice of America. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Alice Bryant, John Russell, Steve Ember, Kay Gallant, and Harry Monroe. But first, this report. Scientists have documented rare salt formations for the first time on the shores of the Great Salt Lake in the American state of Utah. The formations could lead to better understanding of salt structures found on the planet Mars before they disappear. The salt formations are appearing now in part because water levels at the large natural lake have lowered. Lack of rain and more demand for water from a growing population have left more shoreline uncovered. The expanded shoreline means there are more places where water, warm and rich with the mineral sulfate, can rise to the surface from the springs below. When the water hits the cold air, it forms Glauber's salt, also known as mirabilite. It has to be exposed to just the right conditions, park official Allison Thompson told the Associated Press. She first saw the salt formations in October. The formations have built up over the last several months, eventually creating flat structures formed on top of one another. From above, the structures are like a huge complex design laid over the sandy earth. An up-close look reveals tall formations gathered together like something out of science fiction. There are now four formations at the Great Salt Lake shores, growing up to 1 meter tall and several meters wide. Mirabilite formations are seen more often in places with cold temperatures, such as the Antarctic. There are also signs of similar formations on Mars. So, study of the Great Salt Lake formations could offer information on how to examine salts found there. Robert Zubrin is president of the Mars Society. The group was not involved in studying the Great Salt Lake formations, but he agrees they could hold information about whether groundwater or even life was ever supported on Mars. Researchers do not have long to study the Great Salt Lake formations. As winter turns to spring, warming temperatures mean the salt will not continue to separate out of the water. Eventually, melting snow will send water into the lake, raising lake levels and likely swallowing up the sites. This is part of normal changes with the seasons and cycles of rain, says University of Utah professor Kevin Perry. He adds that overall, the lake is not covering as much ground as it once did. Much of that is due to water being diverted away from rivers that feed the lake for farming and other uses before it reaches the body of water. Researchers expect the rare salt formations to be gone by February. I'm Pete Musto.
Hi, everyone. How was your weekend? Mine was relaxing. Let me tell you about it. Listen for me to say the words used to three times. On Saturday, I got up early to to go to my 7 o'clock yoga class. Most of my friends like to sleep late on weekends, but I've been going to this class for a year now, so I am used to waking at sunrise. A few weeks ago, I finally persuaded my friend Tanya to come. She is not a morning person, but after a month of our new routine, she is getting used to the early hours. After class, we like to get breakfast at a cafe down the street. Every week, she orders the same thing, banana pancakes. I used to eat pancakes, but now I enjoy something lighter, like yogurt and fruit. I hope you heard me say used to 3 times as I told my story. But each phrase looks and sounds a little different. These were the phrases from the story. Be used to, get used to, and used to. The phrase used to is unrelated to the other two phrases. But be used to and get used to have similar meanings and sentence structures. Some English learners have trouble distinguishing between the three. Others can tell them apart, but have trouble forming sentences with them. So, on today's Everyday Grammar program, I will show you how to recognize and use each. Let's start with the last phrase, used to. Used to is considered a modal verb, though an unusual one, since it is only found in the past tense. Choose used to say that something existed or happened repeatedly in the past, but does not exist or happen now. For example, I said, I used to eat pancakes. That means I ate them repeatedly in the past, but do not anymore. The sentence structure for used to will always go like this. Subject plus used to plus base verb. The base form of a verb is its shortest form with no S ending. Look for that structure in these examples, including my own. I used to eat pancakes, but now I enjoy something lighter, like yogurt and fruit.
Sasha used to live on Atlantic Avenue near Vanderbilt Street.
He didn't used to believe in ghosts, but he said he saw one at his grandmother's house.
As you just heard, the negative of used to is did not used to, or the more common, didn't used to. Notice the word use does not end with the letter D in the negative. That is because did is already the past tense. Now, let's talk about be used to. Choose be used to say you are accustomed to something, and so it seems normal or usual. If you are used to something, it is not difficult, new, or strange. In be used to, the verb be can take the present, past, or future tense, though future is less common. And the words used to are an adjective, not a modal verb. Earlier, you heard the present tense am in my sentence, I am used to waking at sunrise. That means I am accustomed to it. The sentence structure goes like this. Subject plus be plus used to plus gerund, noun, or pronoun. In other words, the phrase be used to will be followed by some kind of noun, whether gerund or otherwise. You may remember that a gerund is a kind of noun that ends in ing. Listen to a few examples, including my own. Pay attention to the verb tense of be, and note that nouns follow be used to. But I've been going to this class for a year now, so I am used to waking at sunrise.
She doesn't think Dami is strange. She is used to him.
Look, the bird is frightened. It is not used to large crowds.
Notice that the negative for be used to is be not used to. And finally, we have get used to. Remember, this phrase is related in meaning to be used to. The difference is that get used to means someone is, was, or will become accustomed to something. So the verb get in the phrase can take the present, past, or future tense. For example, I said this about Tanya. She is getting used to the early hours. That means she is becoming accustomed to being awake in the early morning. The words used to and the phrase get used to are also an adjective. The sentence structure goes like this. Subject plus get plus used to plus gerund, noun, or pronoun. Listen for the verb tense of get in the following examples. And take note that nouns follow get used to. But after a month of our new routine, she is getting used to the early hours.
I hated this haircut at first, but I got used to it. I like it now.
The baby will not get used to the new sitter. I think she misses her dad.
Note the negative of get used to, which is not get used to. And that's it for today. I hope you have a relaxing weekend ahead, too. I'm Alice Bryant.
Researchers say they have successfully created another embryo of the northern white rhino. The animal risks disappearing forever. Just two remain, and both are female. This new, viable embryo is the third of its kind. To make the embryo, scientists used eggs from one of the surviving females. They inseminated the eggs with frozen cells from dead males. The embryos are stored in a cool liquid that protects them. They will be put into a surrogate mother, a southern white rhino, in the coming months. The Kenya Wildlife Service and officials from Kenya, the Czech Republic, Germany, and Italy made a statement about the success. Kenya's wildlife minister, Najib Balala, called the ability to stop the loss of the northern rhino amazing. The goal is to create a group of at least five animals that could return to their natural environment. This process could take many years. The two remaining female northern white rhinos, Najin and Fatu, live in Kenya. Fatu's eggs made all three viable embryos. Thomas Hildebrandt is with the Leibniz Institute for Zoo and Wildlife Research in Germany. Now the team will make every effort to achieve the same result for the 30-year-old Najin before it is too late for her, he said. The operation is safe and can be performed regularly before the animals become too old, the statement said. The next step is to choose female southern white rhinos among those at Kenya's Olpaheta Conservancy to serve as a surrogate mother, Kenya's wildlife minister said. Years of humans killing the animals illegally have severely reduced the number of rhinos. The last male northern white rhino was a 45-year-old named Sudan. In 2017, Sudan became famous when he appeared on an online service that connects possible romantic partners. The service, called Tinder, listed the rhino as the most eligible bachelor in the world. The title was part of a fundraising effort. Sudan, named for the country where he was born, died in 2018. I'm John Russell.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. In the 1890s, the American people were deeply divided money system. Should the United States support its currency with gold or with gold and silver? The question became the main issue in the presidential election of 1896. Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe tell the story of that election.
Many Americans wanted a gold standard. They said the United States should support its money only with gold. A gold standard, they said, would keep the value of the dollar high. These people were called gold bugs. Most were businessmen, bankers, and investors. Many other Americans wanted the United States to support its money with both gold and silver. They thought the value of the dollar was too high. A high dollar, they said, drove down prices for agricultural products. A silver standard would lower the value of the dollar. These people were called silverites. Most were farmers, laborers, and owners of small businesses.
The debate over gold and silver was especially important because of an economic depression that began in the United States in 1893. Thousands of banks and businesses closed. Millions of men lost their jobs. Foreign investors withdrew their money from America. Americans who had money were afraid to invest it. Many people believed the Depression would end if the government issued more paper money backed by silver. President Grover Cleveland disagreed, and he opposed any legislation that might threaten the gold standard. He noted that every major nation supported its paper money with gold. The United States would be foolish, he said, not to do the same. It could not stand apart from the world's other money systems.
President Cleveland belonged to the Democratic Party. By 1896, many Democrats had become silverites. They gained control of party organizations in several western and southern states. They called Cleveland a traitor to his party and to the American people. They did not want him to be the party's candidate in that year's election. The Republican Party also was divided over the issue of gold and silver. Some members from silver mining states in the West left the party. Others remained in the party but gave support secretly to silverite Democrats. Republicans had done well in the congressional elections of 1894. They won control of both the Senate and House of Representatives. Party leaders were sure a Republican could be elected president in 1896. The most likely candidate appeared to be Governor William McKinley of Ohio.
McKinley was, in fact, nominated on the first ballot at the Republican convention in St. Louis, Missouri. The Democratic Party held its nominating convention in Chicago, Illinois. The most likely candidate was Congressman Richard Bland of Missouri. A majority of convention delegates, however, were Silverites, and they expected to nominate a Silverite candidate. Supporters of President Cleveland wanted to test the Silverites' strength. They demanded a debate on the gold-silver issue. Several men spoke in support of President Cleveland and the gold standard. Several spoke in support of silver. The last to speak was Congressman William Jennings Bryan of Nebraska. He had led an unsuccessful fight in Congress to keep America using silver.
Bryan spoke emotionally during the convention debate. He said he represented America's farmers, laborers, and small businessmen who wanted a silver standard. Bryan ended his speech with a line that became famous during the campaign. It called to mind the torture and death of Jesus Christ. Bryan said gold supporters could not force their money system on silver supporters. "You shall not," he said, "crucify mankind upon a cross of gold." With those words, William Jennings Bryan won the nomination away from Congressman Bland. He would be the Democrats' presidential candidate. He was just 36 years old.
A number of Democrats refused to accept Bryan as their candidate. They withdrew from the Chicago convention and held one of their own. They called themselves National Democrats. They nominated candidates for president and vice president, but they did not win many votes in the election. America's third party at that time, the People's Party, had a difficult decision to make. Populists, as they were called, agreed with Silverite Democrats that the United States should have a silver standard. So some believed the party should unite with the Democrats to support Democratic candidate William Jennings Bryan. If they did not, Republican William McKinley was sure to win the election. Other populists feared that such a union would mean the end of the People's Party. The populists solved the problem at their nominating convention. Like the Democrats, they chose Bryan to be their candidate for president. But they chose a different candidate for vice president. In this way, William Jennings Bryan was able to run for president at the head of two separate political parties.
There was a great difference in the way the two presidential candidates campaigned. William McKinley refused to travel. Instead of going to the voters, he let the voters come to him, and they did. Railroad companies supported McKinley. They ran special trains to his home in Ohio. The trip was free. Each trip was the same. A band met the train and marched with the group to McKinley's home. McKinley came outside to hear a statement of support from the leader of the group. Then he made a short speech and shook hands. The group left, and another one came. On one day of the campaign, McKinley met 30 groups this way. That was more than 80,000 people.
While McKinley stayed at home, William Jennings Bryan traveled. He visited 27 states and spoke to 5 million people. Bryan explained that he had to travel because the Democratic Party did not have enough money to campaign in other ways. Bryan spent $650,000 on his campaign. McKinley spent $3.5 million. Bryan's main campaign idea was that the gold standard would ruin America's economy. McKinley's main campaign idea was that silver money would ruin the economy. For a time, Bryan's campaign seemed to be succeeding. More and more people promised to support him. Then, in the final weeks before Election Day, the situation began to change. The depressed economy showed signs of improving. The price of wheat rose for the first time in several years. Perhaps, people said, it was wrong to blame gold for the Depression. Perhaps, they said, the ideas of William Jennings Bryan were wrong.
On Election Day, it was soon clear who had won. McKinley received 270 electoral votes. Bryan received 176. Bryan congratulated McKinley. Then he told his supporters to begin getting ready for the next presidential election. "If we are right about silver," Bryan said, "we will win 4 years from now."
McKinley's election seemed to give new life to the American economy. Within a month, a business publication reported that buying and selling had increased greatly. It said demand for goods had led to the reopening of factories closed during the Depression. At the same time, new supplies of gold were discovered in Alaska, Australia, and South Africa. The extra gold increased the supply of money in the same way silver would have increased it. Taxes on imported goods rose to almost 60%. Under this protective tariff, American industry grew fast. The Depression ended.
The economic depression of the 1890s forced Americans to worry first about developments at home. But there were a number of international developments then which involved the United States.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Pete Musto.
And I'm Dorothy Gundy.